the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
The week trending, we have Lise Hand, journalist, and Dion Fanning, co-host of the Free State podcast. You're very welcome, both of you. Let's start with you, Lise. And very interesting story. The European Commission is calling on households to stockpile 72 hours of food and to put together a sort of an emergency kit. Why and what's going on here?
Well, it is quite extraordinary, just I think the breakneck speed at which we've reached this point where so many different things are going on. I mean, it's literally like your four horsemen of the apocalypse, the sort of wars, plagues, floods and cyber winters. That has prompted the EU to suggest that people do put together a survival kit for 72 hours with necessaries from, you know, battery radios, water, medicine, all that kind of carry-on, in the possibility that something cataclysmic is going to happen to Europe. Now, you know, you can understand their state of alarm because, I mean, you know, in the last couple of months, well, I suppose really since, you know, the change in the regime in the US, you know, we have just seen the whole relationship between the EU and the US break down, and obviously Russia on the other side throwing extremely sinister shapes. We have, you know, all kinds of sabotage going on. So there's an understandable, I suppose, layer of alarm. But I think the notion that they're calling for people to put together the survival thing, I mean, it's a little bit like the, it reminds you of the 1950s, the sort of the duck and cover films they used to do in the 1950s when they used to warn school children to hide under the desk in the event of a nuclear attack.
And cover don't their, look at the
cover
flash.
Cover their face and neck. You know, you'd sort of wondered, is this, you know, this sort of advice, you know, is it just how sensible is it?
Yeah, but Dion, apparently countries like Finland and Sweden, which are much closer to Russia than we are, have had these sort of policies in place for a long time. It's just now that the EU wants them extended across all member states.
Yeah, well, I guess if you talk to people in Finland and countries like that, they do have an understandable sense of anxiety about these issues, and especially since the invasion of Ukraine. Like as a naturally anxious person, my first thought was like, what happens after 72 hours? Like, what do I need to do? Like, it's, you know, is this it? Like, do we just have to survive for 72 hours? Because, you know, it doesn't say what's going to happen then. But it's like all these things. And Lisa's right. It's like the, you know, 1950s or, you know, the nuclear scares of, but they weren't scares. You know, the Cold War era, when we used to watch programs like Threads and The Day After and all these things, which had an understandable message, but also managed to create this awful sense of fear in people. And again, with this situation, it's hard. Like, yeah, I thought it was interesting in one of the stories, it said that, you know, that when the EU Commission announced their new military plans, they changed the name of it from Rearm Europe to Readiness 2030. Which sounds more like a kind of, you know, yoga kind of wellness retreat. Like you'll be happy and serene by 2030. But it's to do with their military plans. But clearly, Rearm Europe is a bit too on the nose for them. But again, it is hard with these situations because again, you know, you look at it and go, are people? How much should we be concerned? Obviously, we should be very concerned about certain aspects of it. But when everything is coming back to this sense of being afraid, there are people who are going to capitalise on that as well.
Let's actually hear a little bit of the European Commissioner for Crisis Management, Hadja Lahib, she outlining what is in her 72 hours survival kit.
And don't forget your medication. You might need it, because you never know. And don't forget something to eat. You might be hungry, very hungry. And of course, some cash. In the middle of a crisis, cash is king. And your credit card might just be a piece of plastic, a charger, and a power bank. Because a dead phone is a dead end. Playing cards, bit of distraction, never hurt anyone. And don't forget a radio. The smaller one. This is everything you need to survive the first 72 hours of a crisis. speaking about being prepared, the EU is preparing its strategy to be sure that every citizen is safe in case of crisis. Be prepared, be safe.
Why the music from a 1920s silent movie?
Like lift music or something, you know, that music you hear and in the background. I mean, you think they'd have a bit of, I don't know, Elgar or something, you know, fairly doom and gloom.
It's like just getting ready for a gambling weekend, cash and a pack of cards. Like, you know, you could be, you know, it might not last 72 hours.
Okay, there's a lot of our listeners are in favour of this, saying things like 72-hour survival kits and instructions are standard civil defence procedures throughout Europe. Irish people should have learnt from this, from the recent storm issues. And I think there's actually a good point in that even if it isn't war that we might be fearing, or Russian invasion here in Ireland, if we do have things like our electricity gets cut off, or we have major climate issues, then surely we should all have, you know, tins of beans or chickpeas and things like that stocked away if necessary. And even the idea of having a bit of cash rather than always depending now on your cards or on your phone when they might not work.
Oh yeah, I mean, I certainly think that there's a lot of sense to it. I mean, and I think the people really, the storms, Storm Éowyn really concentrated people's minds. I think that having things like cash around the house, because let's face it, the more likely attack would be in some kind of attack on the financial system, as in, you know, the banks or something that might, you know, there's been a huge amount of chatter, obviously, around the undersea cables. And, you know, if they were snipped, we'd be in all kinds of trouble. So, you know, it does make sense. And I mean, we had the, obviously when 5 years ago, almost exactly when we had the COVID shutdown. I mean, it's fairly obvious what Irish people will go for. I mean, it's obviously bog roll and bread. And they would be the two things that most people would stock up on, you know. I mean, I'm quite sure, yeah, you know, I'm sure if you ask loads of people, they'd say, you know, definitely bog roll, bread, tea bags, crisps, lots and lots of alcohol. Which, because if you go,
I'm surprised you left the alcohol so far down the list.
Well, I decided
they wouldn't fit in her bag, though. She had a very small little bag.
Oh, I have a huge rucksack. You'd be amazed how much I can fit into that.
Okay, Andrew in Dublin says it's remarkable how blasé Irish commentators about any possible threat to good old Ireland. This feeds into our apparently sacred adherence to neutrality. Nobody seems able to explain why we should be so immune or have any responsibility in this regard. It's smug arrogance. Another one saying, being so Irish about this, your commentators are being slightly ignorant, says this listener. Okay. But then another one says, I'm actually annoyed you're even giving this airtime. There's enough hysteria around at present. Another one says, this 72-hour preparation kit from the EU is complete nonsense. Just as things are calming down in the war, they are talking about spending a trillion. This is just a cynical ploy to enrich German and other arms companies. I don't know how things are supposedly calming down. We don't have a ceasefire between Ukraine and Russia. And given the fears that we have, Dion, that America is essentially abandoning NATO, surely the European Union has to increase its spending on its own defence.
Well, yeah, I guess there's no question that you can't say things are calming down. You can't say that we've now reached a more sedate time in world affairs just because of, you know, Trump saying he's going to bring peace to Ukraine. I guess the concern is that, again, like in previous situations like this, that, you know, there will be people who say, you know, again, to the carpenter, every problem looks like a nail. And there will be people who say the answer to every issue is more defence spending. And I accept that point that we can't, Ireland has probably piggybacked on people, has probably looked for other people to kind of bail it out. But bail it out of what is still a very kind of relevant question, you know, and things like the undersea cables and stuff like that, which are things we need to protect. We need to protect. But then you see things like fighter jets, and you see Simon Harris wanting to order a fleet of fighter jets. Now, it's like, are we really fighter jet people? You know, like, we don't have a water system that works. The idea that we would have a kind of fleet of fighter jets ready to go doesn't strike me as a kind of priority.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's being particularly, I suppose, too laid back about this. I mean, when you have, you know, the normally fairly calm and ebullient finance minister, Pascal Donohue, basically coming out, sounding the alarm about, the dire consequences of the imposition of massive tariffs and so on. I think people are looking ahead and just are pretty wary about what's coming down the tracks to us. But and I think if it makes people feel better, certainly put together a pack. And sure, we probably all still have Joe Jacobs' iodine tablets somewhere in the back of the cupboard as well.
I'm not sure they work anymore. No, 20 years on.
Actually.
Okay, let's move on to something else. Something else I think that might annoy a few people, because there was a debate in the House of Commons about St. Patrick's Day in Northern Ireland affairs. And this British MP, Andrew Rosendale, had a suggestion about fostering closer ties between Ireland and Britain.
The Republic of Ireland, Madam Deputy Speaker, I believe are our friends. But we can be much closer, fully realising that we are one family that share a unique group of islands in all spheres of national operation. Indeed, Ireland could do much more work themselves alongside her British brother and her loyal northern neighbour in recognising that shared heritage and advancing shared values and goals on the global stage. Ireland would do well to emulate countries such as Australia, Canada and New Zealand. I hope that one day, perhaps soon, the people of the Republic of Ireland might choose to take their rightful place in the family of the Commonwealth of Nations.
Now, Dion Fanning is co-host of the Free State podcast. What do you reckon the chances are of that ever happening?
Well, I did saw this story. I'm afraid I had to think of my co-host, Joe Brawley, and how he would respond to this idea.
Because and his blood pressure.
And his blood pressure, and my blood pressure, if I was sitting opposite him when it was raised, which I might have to do. When I saw this story first, I actually thought it was one of those ideas that, you know, that has floated about a United Ireland, and that, you know, if we wanted a United Ireland, we might rejoin the Commonwealth as a way of making it more palatable to unionism. You know, it's something that lots of people would object to, but there would be, at least be some argument for it in that sense. But this is kind of even more extraordinary, because it's just the Republic of Ireland come back to the Commonwealth, and let's pretend it never happened. It's
not, I suppose we see the Commonwealth as this great imperial organisation, but it's not that anymore, is it? It's not dominated by Britain anymore. It's those countries that previously were subjects to Britain but no longer are. And when you see the way shifting world alliances are taking place at the moment, even suggestions that Canada might become part of the European Union has been floated by some people. Canada distancing itself from the United States in the last couple of days as strongly as you can imagine. Could it be that, you know, we need to start imagining things like this as part of new arrangements without the United States?
A nice try, man.
Yeah, I have to see him trying to play the devil's advocate here, really. I mean, look, wouldn't it not be better served if just Britain just, you know, rejoined the EU? I mean, that's a far more easy option. And, you know,
and entirely logical. When you see the way Keir Starmer is cooperating with Emmanuel Macron in relation to Ukraine, the rest, and yet, despite the fact that Britain clearly has been dramatically handicapped by Brexit, pride means that even with a new Labour-led government, they're just afraid to go and actually admit to the fact that they got it wrong.
Well, this is the thing. And I mean, it is the more logical thing. You know, this isn't the first time this happened. I mean, even Frank Fian, now Senator, I think, or TD, I think he was a Senator at the time for Leitrim. You know, he floated this a few times about 10 years ago and got absolutely and utterly destroyed for it. And Geoffrey Donaldson floated it a few years ago as well. I mean, this isn't a particularly new thing. It gets dusted off every now and then.
Yeah, but you know, when you go back to things about our defence, we actually have outsourced a lot of our own defence responsibilities to Britain. It's the British Air Force, or whatever they call it, which is actually patrolling our skies, because we don't have those fighter jets that Dion was just giving out about.
Well, I think that, but I think that's a separate, you know, when you talk about the Commonwealth, I mean, you know, it's still rejoin the Commonwealth means acknowledging King Charles as the head, right? Which I think really a lot of people here would have a rather massive issue with. You know, I think they'd rather build a fighter jet themselves, you know, out of Lego or something, rather than have to go down that road again. So, look, it's one of the guy stood up. He was probably well-meaning and, you know, assumed that, you know, his idea would be welcomed, which, again, just goes to show a certain thin air in certain parts of the British Conservative Party with regards to our relations.
It's funny because I do think we, and you know, I lived in London for a long time and loved it. And you know, I think being Irish in, and you know, some of the contributions that Bade made this point, like being Irish in England is for the most part a very easy experience these days, and people are. You know, you're made very welcome.
In a way that previous generations didn't experience.
Yeah, but
often.
Yeah, no, I think you know, had a more complicated relationship. But I think we have a very complicated relationship with England, but we also don't like, you know, we may culturally absorb an awful lot of it, but we don't like to be kind of. We don't like this idea that we might sort of be brought back into the fold. We want to take whatever aspects of their culture that we enjoy without actually this idea that somehow next thing you know we'll be, you know, acknowledging King Charles as our head of state.
Yeah, one of our listeners has asked if we can check the date, that this isn't our early 1st of April effort. It's not. And as it happens, the Oxford English Dictionary has added what are described as uniquely Irish words. The Oxford English Dictionary publishes monthly updates on phrases and sayings, 600 new editions for March, which add things like spice bag and blah, and Debs, and Ludraman, and Mineral, and Morto. And Lisand, in the decades that I've known you, you have been using the word Morto, often to describe afterwards your own embarrassment about your own behaviour. How is it actually only now that this is actually making it as a word for the Oxford English Dictionary?
I'm only scarlet for them, actually. It took them so long. Yeah, I mean, I love the story and I'm so pleased with this story. I mean, I've always argued that we don't speak English, we speak Hiberno, which is a distinct and separate branch from English, because the way we speak it, the way we use words, the way we construct words, it's completely different than, you know, your sort of received pronunciation style English. I love in fact they've put spice bag in there because, you know, and they also very helpfully put the recipe in as well, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And I'm just going to read it out because there may be some people here who don't know what it is. And it is
such
described,
as the man sitting in the studio with us.
Who has actually shamefully just said he's never had a spice
never had
bag.
It, but I know what it is.
Morto for you now. Yeah. So it is, in quote, but in the OED, a takeaway meal usually sold from either Chinese food outlets or fish and chip shops, typically consisting of chips, shredded deep-fried onion, chicken, fried onions, red and green peppers, chili peppers and jalapeno peppers, tossed together in a bag with various spices and often served with curry sauce for dipping. Now, if that doesn't put the goo, another word that probably should be included, I don't know what would.
I thought you always kept goo for your pints.
Well, it is more applicable to definitely liquid than solids. But I would also just like to put an appeal in, if they're listening, I would love them to think of, there's a couple I would argue for to be included next year. They would include Gurrier, Gom. Well, I'm going to say this one because it was Simon Harris that brought it up and put it into the wild, Gowl. Definitely Segosia. And my all-time favourite, Wagam, which is one of the best words of all time. Well, often flung in my face and actually misapplied by no less a personage than Kate Moss, who announced in an interview one day that herself, Christy Turlington and Naomi Campbell acquired, we're told they were wagons during some visit in Dublin, and they thought it meant being tipsy. So they were going around calling each other wagons, not just thinking it was, oh, I have a few drinks on board.
And was it you who called them wagons?
No, it absolutely was not.
I thought this was going to be a shameless bit of name dropping about the time.
Yeah, no, I wish it had been me, but the person was never named. But the entirety of Ireland, when they read the story, just went...
It was just somebody acting the maggot, which has also gone into the list.
I would throw in, my wife, who's English, uses this now religiously, sure look it, as an answer to anything, sure look it. Like, you know, it doesn't mean it's great...
Is she going to be a GA manager?
She might be a GA. But it's a great way of just, you know, buying time in any conversation. You just, nobody knows, it's very, you know, it's ambiguous, you don't know what it means, and it just gets, sure look it, yeah, we don't know. But I do think, I'm delighted to see a spice bag in there, even though I haven't had one, because I do also think this means we're kind of, it's another step forward for us as a nation, because to have that sort of cultural fusion where we have done something with a sort of ethnic cooking and turn it into our own thing. And, you know, it reminds me that chicken tikka masala was invented in a restaurant in Glasgow with a tin of Campbell's soup. You know, it's not an Indian dish at all. It was created for, you know, the people of Glasgow.
And the one-on-one was invented in a chipper on Pier Street because the Italian behind the Italians running it, the old mama didn't have any English. So when somebody came in and ordered fish and chips, she used to turn around and say a one-on-one, and that just became then taken up by the locals. Oh, yeah, the stuff, the trivial stuff I know is just...
Oh, I know, you know, a lot of trivial nonsense. I agree with you on that. Okay. By the way, actually, Dion, I know you lived in England for quite a long time. So do they have election posters when it comes to election time?
No, they don't. Don't have them anywhere.
The reason I ask is because our electoral commission wants the public's views on the future of election posters here in Ireland. Lots of people give out about them whenever we have an election on, that they're getting in the way of clear view of traffic at traffic lights, and then giving out about them, they've been left up for too long. They have to be done within a week, but not everyone gets their election posters done. Should we be upset by election posters, or should we be using them as a way to encourage people to get involved and interested in the political process?
I think we should encourage. I find one of the more tiresome aspects of sort of political discourse, and there are many, is that kind of, you know, people saying, you know, when an election poster goes up 12 hours too early, pointing out that you're now liable to a fine, or as you say, when they stay a bit too long, again, pointing out some misdemeanour that this is. I think they actually engage. I know even from my own son with the last election, you know, people get engaged by seeing the posters, and they become aware of the candidates and all that kind of thing. I remember as a kid, I don't think you can do this anymore, I remember as a kid stealing many posters during the kind of great elections of the early 1980s. There was all these, you could get them down a lot easier then, and coming home with like the, you know, the Fianna Fáil poster.
Dion, why would you want to steal an election poster?
I was a very young
political
junkie.
Was this so you could deface them afterwards?
No, I just brought
them home. I mean,
what's
wrong with the traffic?
Do you have a collection somewhere stashed of political posters?
You know, Alan Kinsella, the great... I actually told him this before, that I...
And he has every bit of election memorabilia going back for decades. It's a fantastic collection.
So I did... I could have been Alan Kinsella, but I wasn't. But I remember just taking...
You sort of grew up and stopped going up, shimmering up lampposts to take them down?
I took the sensible route.
Well, Lise, you used to be a political journalist, did the Leinster House beat for years.
Yep.
Do you object to the political posters?
No, I don't. I could see why some people could be annoyed if they are genuinely maybe put in place in something slightly hazardous that might be blocking a view, but I think that would be in the minority. I think they do serve as a kind of a good reminder to people that there's an election on, because... As a political journalist in Leinster House, it used to fascinate me when I was out on the hustings with various, you know, candidates, that people would say, oh God, there's an election on. And they'd be, you know, just like really not have that same awareness. And people can take really, I think, in the Leinster House bubble or political bubble, how engaged or disengaged people are. So I think they're a good idea.
Lots of comments coming. Shane in Galway says it's the election poster tie wraps that are the real problem, and they always get left behind. These are the cable ties that get left. Another one says in Australia, election posters are only allowed on private property. And here now, here's a contentious one. Could it be the spice bags are not an Irish invention at all? Because as a listener saying, I was getting spice bags in 1980s Newcastle upon Tyne.
Ooh,
could we have
spice
stolen
bag war
spice bag?
We're going to leave the Commonwealth over this.
The news.
And you thought we were back in.
Jalapeno peppers, I mean, they're native to, I think, South County Dublin, aren't they?
Yeah. And to finish, there's a listener who says, not sure it'll ever happen, but you're clearly not aware that several Commonwealth nations do not recognise the British monarch as head of state. Oh. It's not compulsory. On that note, we will finish. Thank you very much, Lise Hand and Dion Fanning, co-host of the Free State Podcast.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.